In this episode of the Bear Performance Podcast,
I have learned how to profit from pain, right? Because pain equals growth. Growth equals power. Power equals knowledge, and knowledge equals profit. And the way that I address anything, any obstacle, obstruction in my life is the more I know, the more I'll grow. So working for this guy, right? Best in the business. I am not a businessman. I wasn't a salesperson. I wasn't this. I got real uncomfortable getting, you know, when you get thrown, I mean, I got thrown in the shark tank. But I learned, I'm eager, I'm hungry. And that's what I think a lot of people can resonate with. If you're eager and you're hungry, I don't listen to the noise. I don't listen to the people. Everybody said, you'll never be a Navy SEAL. You'll never be this. You'll never be that. You'll never do this. Screw that, man. Screw that. I love being uncomfortable because I'm breaking barriers every time I do it.
Welcome back to another powerful episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Nick Bear, founder and CEO of Bear Performance Nutrition. Every week, we bring you insightful stories, knowledge, and inspiration to help you reach your full potential in life, fitness, and business. If you enjoy the message we're promoting in this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you would leave a rating and review on the platform you are listening to. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes that embody the Go One More mindset. Ladies and gentlemen, today we have Bedros Koulian and Ray Cash Care. Bedros is the founder of Fit Body Bootcamp, founder of the Modern Day Night Project, and co-founder of the Squire program. Ray Cash Care is a former Navy SEAL, CIA previously, lead instructor of the Modern Day Night Project, and co-founder of the Squire program. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you for having me, sir.
It's been a long time coming. We've been, you know, me and Ray have been back and forth for a few months now trying to put this together.
We have. I was a fanboy. I reached out to you months ago and was like, I love your content and we seem to have a lot in common. And yeah, I just kind of threw it out there and you chewed up on it. You're like, let's do it. And I was surprised and here we are.
I think we can offer a lot of powerful information in today's episode. Like I talked about with you guys, the intent of today is talking all about the power of suffering and why we should search for suffering and suffering with a purpose. So to dive right into it, I'd love to have you guys explain at what point in your life did you realize that there is an actual purpose in suffering and we should search for that purpose and that event?
So I'll kick that off. What I didn't know was that what happened to me, the suffering I went through as a kid. So my family and I escaped the Soviet Union when I was 6 years old in 1980, came to the United States. In Armenia, where we lived, before we escaped, I was molested by two older boys. When that happens, you tend to disassociate when that's happening because it's the only way you can mentally cope with it. I knew I had some special superpowers growing up that I could deal with more hardship than the regular person. But I didn't know that it was because of that until 2010, when I promised my wife a decade earlier, so in 2000, that I would run a marathon with her. I said, and jokingly, I said, hey, if you marry me, I'll run a marathon. And so whatever, she says yes, we get married. A decade goes by and she runs 3 marathons a year and I had yet to run a marathon. And one day, one of my business partners is schooling one of our coaching clients and he's like, look, man, you got to cut your deadlines in half and then cut them in half again. I'm like getting gassed up as he's saying this to this person. So I text my wife under the table and I'm like, hey, when's your next marathon? And she goes, in 6 weeks, the San Diego Rock and Roll Marathon. Now, up until that point, I just kept telling myself, well, God's built me to lift weights. I'm big, I'm strong. I'm supposed to lift weights. I'm not built to run. And the funny thing is we put ourselves in a box and our identity takes hold of whatever we think. Because whatever we think, we'll go find evidence to justify it. And so I was convinced that I'm not a runner. So I had 6 weeks to train for and run a marathon. And the process of training for 6 weeks and then running and completing that marathon, here I thought I was just running a marathon and finally keeping that promise to my wife. All of a sudden, I become a better father. I become even more disciplined in my workouts and my nutrition. I become a better leader. I deal with adversity less. It's like this mental thermostat went up in every level, emotional quotient, mental quotient. I was more decisive. And I realized that suffering in one area bleeds into every area of your life. Then I started taking on these 6-week challenges habitually, 2 a year, consistently. In fact, my next one starts April 4th when I get my one wheel I was telling you about.
Isn't it interesting how not only we put ourselves in boxes, but people try to put us in boxes mm-hmm. and tell us where we belong. And I feel that same way. It just in terms of running, right? Like I was strength training most of my life. And then I transitioned into the endurance space. And everyone said, that's not you. Stick to what you know. Stick to what you're good at. It's like, fuck, what if I don't want to be good at that anymore?
How do they know what your body is meant to do? And let's not forget that the body is so adaptive, right? It's so adaptive. Like, what if I try and run? What if I try and climb? What if I try and surf? What if I try and lift even more? As it turns out, your body will adapt to anything you put it to. But people will take their own insecurities and project it on us. Mom and dads do this. School teachers do this. Grandparents do this. And they go, watch out, be careful, slow down. Don't grab that. You'll fall as you're a kid. And then if you do fall, they go, oh, you're clumsy. And then if you happen to be chunky, they go, you've always been chunky. So you start creating the narrative, the storyline of this is who I am. I'm clumsy. I'm chunky. I'm not athletic. And I got 2 left feet. Then you get into your 20s and 30s and you're trying to unfuck yourself when you realize that, wait a minute, I could actually accomplish anything. I may not have natural talent, but if I put some work ethic into it and I'm willing to actively suffer to produce an outcome, that I will become the higher version of myself. And that's what people miss out on.
Part of that requires confidence.
Bingo.
And I'm a big fan of Tim Grover and his book, Winning. And he talks about, you just got to get your first win. That first win builds this little bit of confidence. But then you get this taste and desire for that next win. That next win requires more sacrifice, but with more sacrifice brings more confidence. And you keep going after that next win, which is more sacrifice and more confidence. And before you know it, you know, Matthew McConaughey says this thing where he doesn't believe in the word unbelievable. Nothing is unbelievable. And when I heard that, it resonated with me because Nick Bear in 2009, graduating high school, thought that I knew where my life was going to end up. I knew what I thought I knew what my possibilities were. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years later now, there's nothing that's unbelievable. But you, Ray?
You know, same kind of childhood. I've just come to the conclusion that, you know, again, I had a shitty childhood, that there are 7 forms of pain on this planet. There is physical, mental, emotional, social, spiritual, financial, and sexual pain. I am not a growth coach by nature. I am a pain coach. And what I've learned was I was never the biggest, the fastest, the strongest kid that there was. But somehow I kept being the strongest and fastest and biggest kid mentally. I was winning. I was out horsepowering the kids that were twice as big as me. And what I realized is I just went back because I dealt with a lot of physical abuse as a child. And when I say the mental abuse, you know, being told you're nothing and you're worthless. And after a while, that's going to get programmed into your DNA. And at a young age, probably 9 or 10 years old, I just flipped the switch and said, screw that. That's not who I am. That's not what I'm going to be. I'm not going to go down that road because the people in my life, my immediate family, don't believe in me. I'm going to believe in myself. And what I did is I flipped that switch. And what I realized is that I have, and it's something I came up with a long time ago. And I told B when I started working for him is I have learned how to profit from pain, right? Because pain equals growth. Growth equals power. Power equals knowledge, and knowledge equals profit. And the way that I address anything, any obstacle, obstruction in my life is the more I know, the more I'll grow. So working for this guy, right? Best in the business. I am not a businessman. I wasn't a salesperson. I wasn't this. I got real uncomfortable getting, you know, when you get thrown, I mean, I got thrown in the shark tank, but I learned. I'm eager. I'm hungry. And that's what I think a lot of people can resonate with. If you're eager and you're hungry, I don't listen to the noise. I don't listen to the people. Everybody said, you'll never be a Navy SEAL. You'll never be this. You'll never be that. You'll never do this. Screw that, man. Screw that. I love being uncomfortable because I'm breaking barriers every time I do it. Every time that I achieve a new goal or an accomplishment, I feel great. But now this guy taught me something when we first started working. I used to, and this is what a lot of people do when they deal with pain and they've had bad childhoods, they do everything to prove people wrong, right? I'm going to prove my mother wrong, my sister wrong, my dad who's looking down on me wrong. And then he told me, you're doing it wrong. You've got to do it to prove yourself right. And I like that. And I was like, now when I accomplish something, I am, I'm still a kid. When I get a big sale or something, I call him and I'm like, dad, listen. And I love breaking that mold, right? Because people told me, you know, you'll never make this much money. You'll never do this. You'll never. And I have done everything that they said I couldn't do. And instead of stopping there, it's like I go back to the pain. I use it as fuel. And I'll tell you right now, I'm the oldest guy in this room. I'm a half a century old and I'm just getting it right. Like my next 50 years, and I'm going to live, I'm going to be the next Jack LaLanne. That's my mindset. I am going to do even bigger, better, faster, and stronger things in my life. Mm. And it's because I go back to the foundations of my four F-bombs that we're going to talk about later. And I realized that pain and all that stuff that I endured in as a child actually gave me the superpower, which is the internal fortitude to be a better human being. And that's what it's about, right? And I'm a better father for it. I'm a better husband for it. I think I'm a loyal and good employee for it. And all in all, it makes me feel good. But when I can go to that dark place, right? And I know we've all had them. I just go back to that. People avoid that shit. I don't. I welcome it and go, you know what? Just because I was physically abused, I'm not going to do that to my kids. I'm not going to beat my wife. I'm not going to do these things just because this shit happened to me. I'm easy. I'm literally a Jerry Springer show. Like if you look at me, I should be the billboard for a Jerry Springer show. But we are the ones that decided, because we're all successful in our own fashion, decided that's not, like, I remember when you switched over to running, I was like, this guy's never going to be a runner. And you did it. You proved me wrong. And I reached out to you. I'm like, dude, this is amazing. Because you got out of your comfort zone. And what I'm going to tell people is getting out of your comfort zone, it sucks at first, but it gets better. And that's the message that people need to understand. You need to be redlining yourself every damn day in everything that you do, because otherwise you're going to go through life on cruise control. And you see it all the time. People that do, they have a job that they don't like getting to. They don't like getting up. They don't like doing this. No, I love getting up. I love my freaking job. I love my wife. I love my kids. And I love my life.
Can I touch on that for a second?
Please.
Too? You just said something so profound. He loves his job. He loves his wife. He loves his life. Great. And guess what? There's days that I don't love my job.
True.
But I get up and do it anyway. There's days I didn't sleep well. I don't want to work out, but I get up and do it anyway. And I think the difference between someone who is motivated versus someone who's disciplined, the motivated person will only do something when it's right for them. I got good sleep. The wife's happy for me. Everything in work is working out. And damn, I look good naked. I can go work out. If all of a sudden you're arguing with the wife, you had to fire a couple of people at work, maybe there's some culture issues or tax issues or whatever, and you didn't sleep well that night, are you willing to get up and do the work? That's the disciplined human. And I will bet on the disciplined human all day long over the motivated human.
I'm about to start reading this book. So, I mean, I haven't even touched it yet, but just based off of the title, it's called The Molecule of More. And, was recommended by Kat Thomas, and it's about stimulus. And I've been thinking about this concept of consistency and stimulus that creates consistency. Because one of the issues I find with a lot of people from feedback or just observation is consistency is hard for a lot of people. There are a lot of people that are actually inconsistently consistent. So they jump from thing to thing, and while they're in it, they're red hot. And then while they're out of it, they're cold. Mm-hmm. And what creates people to fall in these red hot zones a lot of the time is stimulus, right? It's like this dopamine rush. It feels good. It feels new. It's fresh. But then day in, day out, that stimulus starts to fade a little bit. I think what separates people who are constantly consistent, because I think all high performers, successful people, at the foundational core, it's they're consistent at what they do. It's just showing up day in, day out. And when that stimulus dies, you keep showing up day in, day out, day in, day out. I was thinking about when I was running this past week where, you know, 3 years ago when I started running, it was this high. It was new. It was fresh. It felt good. And now I wake up, I go run 10 miles in the morning. I don't get that same high anymore. It's just, I know it's what I need to do to start the day off right and maintain the results that I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, going back to discipline, motivation. You were motivated before by the high and the dopamine hit, but the disciplined entrepreneur, disciplined leader, disciplined soon to be father is also looking for serotonin. That's the longevity. Serotonin builds empires. Serotonin builds a family. Dopamine, hey, you were really fun to date. Like you had a great date night. Dopamine is so fleeting. But if we can start getting high off serotonin, that long disciplined success where we forego the outcome like you did. What was that thing, the $25,000 that you got, that loan?
It's a pre-commissioning loan from USAA.
Okay, pre-commissioning loan. And a lot of dudes in the military had access to that, you said, right?
Correct.
And in your words, you said dudes would take that loan because you didn't have to pay it back for 18 months, start the payments for 18 months. It was a super low payment plan. And dudes were going on vacations, buying cars, or getting engagement rings for their honeys. And then this dude, Nick Barr, in front of me, is like, you know what? I'm going to take this $25,000 loan from the government and start a business. So you were willing to put off dopamine in exchange for serotonin, the long-term release of happiness, success, consistency. And then we fast forward now, and I wish all those guys well, but the reality is that money became a liability to them. For you, it was an asset and brought you here. Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Yeah, I always look back at that. I mean, that was one of the first valuable lessons I learned where delayed gratification is powerful. You can apply it to everything else in your life. So I'd love to know how you guys started working together, how you guys met, because you're doing some powerful things together. And I'd love to know how that relationship blossomed.
Yeah, I do think we're doing some impactful things for the community. Do you want to tell the story?
I think the way you tell the story is more accurate than
okay.
the way I tell
so,
it.
Okay, so, and again, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for the rawness, but this is how it happened.
Keep it real.
If you know me, you do, Mr. Nick Bear. You know I'm real. I was asked to go speak at an event in Miami, and I was opening for the opener of the opener of the opener who opened for Bedros. So I was down the chain of command, but obviously I knew who he was, and we met, and we instantaneous kind of just hit it off. We went to the bar. Can I get? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I quickly introduced him within knowing him for 5 minutes what a stuntman was. And that's when you...
No, Nick, are you familiar with the stuntman?
I'm not.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you.
Let him have it.
Okay. So you snort the salt, drink the tequila, rub the lemon in your eye.
All right.
It's so stupid, bro. It is so stupid.
It's a Navy trick. Don't you dare.
I really
dare.
Don't want to go to dinner with you tonight
don't
anymore.
Don't you speak of the stuntman in that way, sir. No. Don't fire me, please. But we just kind of started hitting off and talking, and a lot of the things that we had in common were not great childhoods, and we just hit it off. Like, it was kind of like meeting my wife. Like, we hit it off immediately, and we had so much in common. And, you know, it's funny, he heard me speak, and because I spoke before him, and funny thing about that story was I was like, hey, what'd you think of my speech? And he was like, not bad. And I was like, really? And I was like, no, give it to me truth. And he was like, you know, that's why I love B. He's like, okay, well, you need to focus on boom, 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 boom. I went, wow, thanks. But what he said that really resonated with me is he goes, I've got a speech tomorrow that I want you to hear. And I want you to hear the last couple minutes of it because it's really going to touch home with you. And I was like, shit, okay. Well, I have all access. So I'm in a suit and tie there, you know, looking my best. And he's talking. And when it's wrapping up, and I had to piss so bad. I had to go to bathrooms, right? And this is what I know about speaking. If someone tells you to listen to them in a crowd, I've opened for him some huge events. I can pick him out wherever he is. Sometimes he stands up and like, I'm all right, you know, whatever. But what I knew was, is he didn't know where I was, is he probably scanned the room and he didn't see me. And then when he came off stage, I wanted him to know where I was. But I literally could not hold it anymore. So when he comes off the stage, I am literally peeing in a water bottle with my suit on. And he's like, bro, what the? And I'm like, this is what the, and I said, I wanted you to make sure you knew where I was. Now the bathroom, which you don't know, is with the door right there. But imagine what would have happened if he would have scanned the room, not saw me, got off stage and not saw me in it. But yet he took the time to say, listen to this. So I think that's maybe where he either thought, wow, this guy's a freak, or he's really invested in this. And then what happened shortly after is we hit it off. We went to some weird artsy party. We had a good time. And then he asked me to come out and train his team. He got tons, like 80 people or whatever. And we did it at his house in California. And that just kind of started the whole ball a rolling until we got into some other things. Now, I don't know. Like when I tell you the story, how I met my wife and how she says it's two different ways. Is that,
well, I mean, yeah, I just remember looking out the corner of my eye, stage right, when I was on stage, and I saw you like in the dark shadows, and I'm like, that's interesting. He's not in the crowd, but he's off stage listening to me talk, so that's great. Little did I know is he was off stage pissing in a bottle because he didn't want to miss the talk. And to me, it's the little things that matter, right? Like you can tell me all day long, like, hey, B, you're an awesome person, da-da-da-da-da, but you could also show me through action, and I'll buy that 10 times over what you tell me. And so his actions, I saw very quickly, were very consistent to his words. And so after he ran that training event for my team at my house, I'd written a book in 2018. And I said, hey, Ray, so when we met, it was probably 2019, a year after I wrote my book. And my book became a national bestseller quickly. I think part of it was the title's Man Up, but it had nothing to do with men. It's about human up to your highest potential. But if you remember in 2018, there was the Me Too movement, anti-men, with Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby being assholes to women. So my book got a lot of negative publicity, which helped it sell. When people realized it had nothing to do with it wasn't necessarily male empowerment, it was human empowerment. So, but in it, I talked about my 6-week challenges that I do, right? Pick a discipline that I'm not good at, that I'm afraid of doing, and then I would train for 6 weeks and do it. And, so people start asking me after reading my book, like, dude, you should put together some kind of a challenge where we could do it. And I'm like, just go run a marathon, go do a jujitsu challenge, go do MMA like I did. And so when they're like, no, put something together, all these readers, hundreds of DMs every single month after my book launched. So I asked Ray, I'm like, hey, would you run like a 3-day experience for me and like just bring hell to these guys? And then I could teach them business. And then my friend and coaching client, who's a Marine, could also help you with bringing hell. And it'll be ice baths and truck pulls and ocean torture and all this stuff. And we ran the first two classes of what is now the Modern Day Night Project in between his deployments with the CIA. So I was like, all right, when are you deploying with the CIA? These days. I'm like, when are you back? July of 2019. Okay, great. We'll run the next first class July of 2019. And I put up a little thing on my Instagram. Hey, we're looking for 10 to 12 guys who want to work out and do the 75-hour challenge experience, physical, mental, emotional growth, in your 4 F-bombs, faith, family, fitness, and finance. And, but it had to be during the time when Ray's back in town from his deployment. And so, dude, no website or nothing. We got 12 guys to commit $10,000 a piece for this experience. And I knew we had something, but I wasn't ready to tell Ray, like, dude, quit your job with the CIA. Cause maybe it was a fluke. So I'm like, all right, Ray, when's your next deployment? Well, it's these months. All right. So when you come back, can we run class 2? Sure. Class 2. By this point, we had a website. I think we had like 16 guys sign up. So I knew we had something there. And I'm like, hey, are you happy deploying and going away from your family? No. Do you think I could maybe hire you? Sure. And the rest was history, man. And I got to tell you, like the way he describes it, it's like meeting your wife and knowing you're supposed to be together.
Yeah.
In this world of transforming men to their highest self, like I know Ray's supposed to walk this path with me all the way to the end, wherever the end is.
And Nick, I'm not going to lie, I'm a handful. Like
he's a handful.
I'm an emotional rescue because I want to make talking about uncomfortable, switching over from something that I did, SEAL teams, right? I was in the Navy for 12 years, the CIA for 14 years. Now, obviously his reputation, you know, when my wife, we were like, holy shit, you're getting offered this job. It was amazing. But I told him it's so much easier for me to go kick in a door in an unknown environment where it could be the last time I kick in a door. I was so, I hate saying this publicly, scared. I was petrified, right? In my household, my wife is a stay-at-home mom. She's got the toughest job in the world. I love my wife. And what was so cool about B is, like, you usually don't talk to men at this level about these type of things. And I was like, look, B, these are my concerns, right? Like, and he's just like, you know, he's got soothing voice, bro, we got this. And I'll tell you what, I'm not looking back. And it's been an amazing experience. Definitely some growing pains for me. But when you're learning from the best in the business, like, you know, I get it done now. And I, you know, like I said, there are good and bad days, but I love my job, man. I love it. And like, you know, when people ask me, where do you see yourself in 10 years? I'm like, right where I'm at right now. But hopefully, obviously there's different avenues of it. I'm not going anywhere. I told him, I'm either going to die or you're going to fire me. That's the only way I'm going away. And he's like, done. So.
But this speaks also very highly to the theme of this episode, Nick, because when he told me that he was scared, I was like, dude, you're a Navy SEAL. Like, holy crap. What can you be scared of? But I also realized they don't necessarily teach Navy SEALs how to do phone sales, to sell 75-hour awful experience to a dude for 10 to 12 grand, right? They don't teach that. And so I'm like, man, I can teach you that. As long as you're willing to step out of your comfort zone, which again goes back into leaning into the sides of your comfort zone, going into the unknown, expanding that comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And he is literally our top closer for the project and the Squire program, which is a father and son experience. But I share that because if you look at his background, nothing about his background and former employment says that he should be great at phone sales, overcoming objections, follow-up, any of that, learning how to use a CRM. The guy's a freaking beast. And this also speaks to confidence and competency, right? Going back to Tim Grover's book, get that first win, the wins begin to compound. And it's because when we get competent at something, we have more confidence. When we're confident, we have more wins. You win, it's because you increased competency. And then you get confident, and then you get another win. And that's the confidence competency loop. And he's done so many phone sales now that all I have to do is think of other experiences for men that's going to help men level up to their highest potential, and then go, hey, Ray, sell it to them. Like, I don't even need to worry about who's going to sell this next. It's just, he's the guy. But there's something very powerful in stepping out of that comfort zone. Cause he could have very well said, no, man, I'll run the actual workouts and the truck pull and the ocean torture, cause I've done that before, but you got to have someone else sell. He would have made my job harder. He consistently shows up and makes my job easier. So I consistently want to work with him more.
And I did the same thing with you. I don't know if you remember a conversation a couple months ago, but I reached out to you and I said, hey, Nick, I need to talk to you. Remember you sent me the videos and everything?
Running.
I'm wearing the shoes that you told me. I have the heart rate monitor that you told me, and I am getting in better shape because here's my superpower as a Navy SEAL. And I know a lot of Navy SEALs and colleagues, I don't have an ego. I don't have an ego. I just want to be better. So what do? Went to the top. You could have, you answered me right away too. I remember I was laying in bed. I'm like, hey, Nick, can we talk? And you were like, you sent me these amazing videos and stuff. And I'm like, holy shit, that's you, right? With all this stuff. And you told me what to get. Literally the next day I got it. And then when I got it as a courtesy to you, hey, just so you know, I got the shoes that you told me and I did this. And I'm putting in the miles, not your miles. Okay. Just because I'll tell you this right now. I wanted to make sure I run. I have never gotten a high off of running. It sucks every step that I do it, but I know that every step that I do it, I'm getting better. Like when I run, it's an uncomfortable thing, but I love to run. I love being uncomfortable. I still want to break this barrier when it turns into a high. Cause even when I was in Buds and we did the 14 mile run, it sucked.
It takes time.
I hope so.
Well, the thing about growth, like growth requires this level of uncomfort, which is suffering. And I think that a lot of people like the concept of growth. Like they like the idea of it, even in terms of business. It's like our business is growing right now, and you pull the team together and you talk about the plans of growth and what that looks like and what it's going to feel like. And everyone's hyped up and jacked up. And then when you actually put the plan in place of, okay, now we feel the effects of that plan, everyone doesn't always love the growth anymore. They liked it when you hyped it up and you motivated and it was sexy and it was cool. But growth isn't necessarily sexy and cool. And when you learn to love the suffering of what's not sexy or cool, that's when you actually grow.
There's a lot of truth to that in that So at work, we have this phrase my CEO and I call the speeding train. Like our headquarters is the speeding train. And on social media, the speeding train looks awesome and everybody wants to be on. Just like here, I'm sure everyone's watching what Nick's doing. Like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to do that. Because it's easy to take your iPhone and see what Nick's doing. And like, I want to deadlift like that. Then I want to run. Then I want to come in and run my own corporation or at least be part of it. Everybody wants to get on the speeding train because it's sexy when you're looking from the outside in. When you're on the speeding train, you're like, motherfucker, this thing's going to derail any minute. It's rattling and my teeth are about to come loose. I don't know what I need to put my hands on because I ran out of hands and fingers to hold things together, but somehow I'm not getting off the speeding train and it is going to get to its destination or at least the next stop. And so at my headquarters, we have this new hiring process. So HR will hire them for their, will interview them for their skill sets. Great. And then the department head will interview them for, are you going to be a good fit in our little culture or the department, whether it's customer support, funnel making, you know, whatever it is, right? Franchise support, et cetera. And then finally, I do the last and final interview and I just go, I'm like, hey, look, it's just two people sitting in a bar here. We've already gone through two interviews. So it's just, imagine we're sitting at a bar and I want to let you know that I'm probably a horrible person to work for. I've got unreasonable expectations. And I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. And if you follow me on social media, like, yeah, I do. Great. It's the speeding train. It looks so awesome from the outside. It looks like it's just like this choreographed thing. But when you're on the speeding train, you're just committed to the idea that this thing's going to fall off the rails and I'm going to be the first one to die. There's no reason you want to be on this train, right? And I've actually talked people out of working for us. And those who I wasn't able to talk out of working for us, about 20% within the first 2 or 3 weeks will walk to Jesse, to HR, and be like, you know what? He's right. I don't belong on the speeding train. Those who are left are savages. Male or female, it doesn't matter. They're savages. They're committed. And you can tell that there's been some level of discomfort in their life. Abuse, trauma, physical, sexual, mental, emotional, it doesn't matter. Because soon they'll open up to me within months and be like, by the way, that's happened to me, but it wasn't a sexual abuse. It was physical abuse. And I could always tell, like 90% of the people that work for me are either former addicts or have gone through some kind of trauma or abuse that has fortified them mentally and emotionally where they could deal with the stresses of the speeding train where the average human can't. And that's a powerful thing.
Well, that's why I love the startup community. Mm-hmm. I love the startup space because not everyone is made for the startup space. The startup space is not 9 to 5. It is 24/7. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you mention that because people watch the speeding train of BPN and they think all we do is run miles and lift weights and post stuff on social media. And it's unrealistic. There's no way to build a business that way. But you don't want to see the non-sexy stuff. You don't want to see us behind our computers 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 hours a day. You see what you see. And I'll go back to, like, that's what I respect so much about bootstrapping a business. That's why I respect so much about of founders and startups, because you have to have the grit. And if you don't have the grit, you just don't belong. It's like trying to put a square in a circle. It's never going to fit. So let's talk about, you know, we talked about how the Modern Day Night Project kind of started. What is the Modern Day Night Project? What is the purpose? What does it look like? What does it feel like?
I think you're going to do better.
Yeah. So, you know, when you read it, it's the 75-hour fully immersive physical, mental, and emotional course where you're going to get trained by the Navy SEAL, the entrepreneur, the MMA fighter, the SWAT operator. But what it really is it is a 75-hour check in the box to break you down. We are going to break you down. So each instructor has a specific role. My job and Steve's job is we unleash hell on you. And what we're doing is men who have been there and done that and dealt with pain, we come through and we literally take the sledgehammer of life and physically, mentally, emotionally break it down because men build up walls around them. We all do, right? You disassociate the emotional discipline. You go in the red, you go in the blue, you want to be in the green. It's not how men are built. So what we do is we break you down and then there are lessons. We address the pain that you've dealt with. We create the 6 forms of growth, physical, mental, emotional, social, spiritual, and financial growth by dealing and exposing with the past and current pain. This is what I tell each and every man. And this is what I tell every single man that gets on here. If you tell me you've never dealt with any one of the 7 forms of pain, you're full of shit. You just are, right? And then what happens is, and I offer, and B doesn't like this, but I offer money back guarantees at the project. Number one, you will be wet, cold, tired, and hungry, or I'll give you your money back. Number two, collectively, this will be one of the most physically, mentally, emotionally challenging courses you've ever been to. And number three is my biggest one. You will give me, or I'll take from you, three things that this great nation was founded on: blood, sweat, and tears. You're going to bleed. Every single person that goes to our course bleeds in some fashion. You're going to sweat, and I can physically, mentally, emotionally sweat your ass out. What does that mean? I'm going to overheat you, because this is what a man is when he comes to my course. I don't look at you like a human. You are a double-edged sword. All right? And you are on the one edge, it's a savage, and the other one is you're a servant. And what happens to men when they deal with trauma is that blade gets dull. I don't believe in men have midlife crisis. I believe they just need to resharpen their sword. Because what most men do, listen, it's easy for you. Your facility is amazing, and same with his. But you don't stop there. But most men will stop in their life. I'm married. I'm going to stop. I have my kids. I'm paying for them. I'm going to stop. No. Fucking now is the time. And what we do is we surround you with like-minded individuals. I think we're 130 strong right now. And what we do is we give you the tools, and it's an accountability group where we're going to make you, not ask you, make you sharpen the savage and the servant every day by exposing and dealing with pain. Because here's what I'm going to tell you. Men carry two things with them: an inner voice and a toxic cognition. An inner voice, average man has 60,000 thoughts a day. 48,000 of them are negative. That's called an inner bitch. What we're going to do is teach you how to kill a lot of them. We can't kill all of them. Just case in point, you're going to have a daughter. You're going to worry about her till the day she dies. Trust me. I have a 13-year-old. He has a 14-year-old. You will. That's not going to change. But men also carry toxic cognitions, which is a demon, PTSD, trauma. And what we do is we teach you this. You cannot kill that beast. You can't. His past, my past. You can't outrun it. You can't outshoot it. You can't outswim it. You can't outfight it. What you can do and what we will do with this course is we will teach you to turn around and name, claim, and tame that motherfucker. And realize that, number one, you're not alone. Number two, I tell each and every man when they're looking at this course, I don't blame you for what's happened in your life, but I will blame you. I will hold you accountable if you don't do something right now to change your life. Because that's obviously why this course resonated with you. And what we do is we are going to hold you to a higher standard. You ready for this? For the rest of your life. Average male lives till they're almost 90 years old. Nick Bear is 31 years old, right?
Correct.
That means you're stuck with me till you're 90. I'm going to die before you because I'm old as shit, but you're stuck with us. Not only do we do that at this course, something that we do that's so unique, and I love this about Bedros, is we do getaways. We do one for the men, one for the families. This isn't just about you. It's not just about the man that's there. We want to make sure that the things that you're saying are jiving with what your family's seeing, because perception is a mofo, right? Case in point, hey, how's you and your wife? We're doing great, B. We're doing great. We're doing great. We're doing great. My wife knows B. He'll call her and she'll say, yeah, he's still slacking on this, this, and this. And guess what's going to happen? I'm going to get a call from him going, hey, tighten your shit up. Because that's what men need. They need to be called out on their bullshit, and they need to realize that a lot of these men have been going through life with blinders on. They're complacent, they're comfortable, and there's no room for that in this world. Not if you're a man, because listen, as a man, as a woman, you're going to be a parent, you're a CEO of a company, so see, you have no fucking days off. I have no days off. Even when I have a day off, I'm doing active recovery. I get up the same damn time every day. I do the same thing every day. I'm a creature of habit. And that is just like we do here. I am going to create whatever it is. And for me, it's greatness. And that's what this course does. We are going to hold you accountable. We're going to put you at another level. You're going to have men that you can call 24 hours a day. And we are worldwide. And we are making a difference. And I'll tell you what, the men, that's not where I'm seeing the most growth. It's the wives and the kids that are going, thank you, Instructor Ray, thank you. We get emails, phone calls, text messages, fucking smoke signals.
Let me touch on that. Sorry. I mean, you touched on something so powerful there. It's only after a project class, because the class is 75 hours. And dude, I was so naive to this. Because to me, I just wanted to make it a challenge. And if you're paying 10 grand to go through 75 hours, I would imagine you're not going to quit. I know I wouldn't. I didn't quit any of my 6-week challenges, and I ended up paying the entry fee or the coach that I hired or whatever. So when I was telling Ray for class one, he's like, dude, we're going to need a bell. I'm like, what do we need a bell for? He goes, for the quitters. I'm like, no, 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 no one's going to quit. These are entrepreneurs or high level, C-level, leaders of companies. Like, they're type A, man. They're not going to quit. He's like, trust me, we're going to need a bell. Sure enough, we get 25 to 30% of the men who go through the project to quit before the 75 hours is up. Starts Tuesday at 1 o'clock. It ends, Ray secures the class Friday at 4 p.m. And then those who graduated will have an amazing dinner that night. But when you really think about the project, it's not 75 hours. It's like a bait and switch, because what we're selling is you get to go through this awesome, tough experience with an angry Marine, a pissed off SEAL, SWAT operator, MMA guy, and a business coach, where you learn how to make money and organize your life and live, you know, faith, family, fitness, finance. Great, great. But really only, if I could drill it down, it's only 4 hours long. Hour 36, 37, 38, 39. And that's what Ray touched on, is the toxic cognitions. And we have and you'll never see this in any of the sizzle reels that we put out about the project, because it's not sexy. It's grown-ass men sitting around a giant conference table in my gym crying and talking about what traumas happened to them, whether they were molested, beaten. And I'm talking like the worst types of traumas, because what we are so good at doing as men is compartmentalizing pain and putting it away, right? And when we do that, and if the pain comes up, we usually will soothe and shield through distractions. I'm going to start a new business. I'm going to take on a new hobby. I'm going to infidelity, alcohol, food, drugs, pornography. How about I'll watch TV, binge watch TV, anything to distract myself or to get addicted to. You show me a man who's addicted, I will show you a man who's got unprocessed trauma. And when people come up to me like, damn, Bedros, I can't believe you talk about being molested as a kid, man. That's really powerful, man. I was only beaten. I'm like, bro, hold on. The same part of your brain lights up in a CAT scan, the fight or flight area, that mine does. So whether you were beaten, molested, raped, or just told you're a no good piece of shit and I should have aborted you, because we had one of our project graduates, his mom would just yell at him while he was 5, 6, 7 years old until she would fall asleep, and then he would cry himself to bed. And that's one of the things she told him. All that trauma still lights up the same part of the brain, the fight or flight system. And the reason the project really should be 4 hours long, but it's not, is because we can't get, now classes are 36 men deep. We can't get 36 men who just met to sit down and talk to each other and go through a journaling process that I've created that exposes the toxic cognitions. They talk about it. They realize, oh shit, and you're fucked up, and you're fucked up, and you're fucked up, and there's actually a way we can unfuck ourselves. Yep. Yep. The human brain is amazing and healing if we give it the opportunity and don't just get addicted to shit and ignore and avoid the pain. So you've heard the phrase, blood is thicker than water, right?
Correct.
That's taken out of context. The real phrase is, the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. Meaning men who have spilled blood together in battle, athletes on the field, they are tighter, more connected than siblings who come from the womb, the water of the womb. And so Ray and Steve, the Marine and the SEAL, their job is just to beat these guys down through every evolution. And the only way they're going to finish that evolution, whether they're crawling the pit, they're in the ocean, they're pulling the truck, ice bath, is they have to be able to help each other. So you see 36 men in the first few hours who are strangers, you know, all of a sudden calling each other, brother, you got it, brother. Don't quit. Don't look at the bell. Come here. And they'll pull each other up and forward and help each other. I'll carry your rucksack for the next, whatever, 300 yards, and then you'll carry mine. And when I see that brotherhood forming, then I know starting hour 36, they're going to be open and vulnerable. So all we're doing is we're suspending disbelief and creating a brotherhood where they feel like, cool, I could talk about something that I never wanted to talk about before. And if you've ever read Gay Hendricks' book, The Big Leap, fantastic book, everyone listening to this should get it. He talks about breaking through upper limiting factors. We all have like this glass ceiling in our life of how much money we think we can make, how much love we can experience, how much compassion, how safe or vulnerable we can be. We all have an upper limit. That upper limit was set there through negative experiences. And the stats are like 1 out of every 4 people has been sexually abused, and one out of every three people has been physically abused. So just walking around in any city, there's hundreds of thousands of people that have gone through trauma. That means they have a glass ceiling or a negative belief system about themselves. So they feel unlovable. They feel broken. They feel they can't feel emotions deeply. They feel like money's bad, money's evil. Whatever their hangup is, they keep self-sabotaging. Our job through Toxic Cognitions is to go, hey, let's talk about it for the first time. Realize it's not a mountain that defines you, but merely a speed bump on your timeline of life. And as it turns out, what happened to you may have created, if you do the healing work, superpowers. Like for me, I was molested as a kid by two older boys. When I worked with the therapist, he was like, dude, you have a lot of rage. I'm like, yes, yes, exactly. When I go off, like it's like a fucking nuclear bomb. My wife and kids just want to leave the house. And he goes, you feel a lot of shame, huh? I'm like, yes. His name is Kevin Downing. Great, great therapist. I'm like, yes. Like he put words to my feelings, rage, shame, and confusion. Like confusion about like, why did I let these older boys take advantage of me this way? Like, did I do something to invite that? Did I ask for it? Am I secretly gay and didn't know it? So imagine growing up your whole life, all the way into my mid-30s. I was 38 years old when I had a panic attack. And the only reason I went to a therapist, people are like, man, that was so brave of you. I went to a therapist to like help me with the panic attacks because doctor gave me Xanax and I was like so drowsy, I couldn't work. I'm like, hey, I don't want to take Xanax anymore. He goes, try talk therapy. That might help you with your stress and your panic attacks. Within four sessions, Kevin helps me with my panic attacks. He teaches me HALT. HALT is an acronym, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, the alcoholic's going to go back to the alcohol. The porn addict is going to go back to that. You're going to go back to your vice. All right. So check. If you're hungry, eat. Lonely, spend time with someone you love. Angry, talk through it. Tired, get some rest. Fine. Those are triggers. And then he taught me anxiety is anticipation of future pain. So if you're having anxiety, which is going to lead to an anxiety attack, have the conversation with whoever you need to have so that you don't anticipate the future pain, because action alleviates anxiety. Three things, boom. 90% of my panic attacks went away in four sessions. On that fourth session, he's like, hey man, we're done. Problem solved. Is there anything else you want to talk about in life? I'm like, nope. He goes, anything? Like maybe growing up in a communist country, in a communist home with your dad, mom, like parents? I'm like, look, man, my dad beat me, but all communist dads beat their kids. That's just how you grow up. I go, plus what happened to me in Armenia was even worse than the beatings my dad gave me. In 4 weeks, Kevin built such a meaningful relationship with me, trust, that I finally felt safe. My wife didn't even know about this. I finally felt safe to like drop that hint, that nugget, that something worse than my dad beating me happened. He goes, what happened? And I broke down crying. I'm standing at his door. I'm about to leave. I've already signed the credit card receipt, Nick. Like, this is the last session. Peace out. Good to know you. And I'm crying. Grown ass man. I'm the second floor of his building. And out the window, I could see my truck. And I'm thinking, if I could just run through that window and launch myself, I don't have to have this conversation with him. And he's asking me, did this happen? And I'm nodding my head yes, nodding my head no, because like words won't even come out. But I share this with you because I had kept everything so repressed. And I figured that if anyone finds out, it's going to be so embarrassing that it's going to be damaging towards my business, towards my identity, towards my reputation, when in reality, it was none of that. And so my trauma, my toxic cognition created a superpower, the superpower being compassion and empathy towards men who I now openly talk about this on podcasts, in my book, on social media, and men reach out to me and they're like, holy fuck, I can't believe that happened to you. Something similar happened to me. What's the solution? I'm like, bro, therapy, self-work, come do the project. All of those things are like the golden thread. Like you're just going to start. No one of those things will fix you, but a combination of those things over time, consistency, will help you. And so this is how we get them into the project. The project is for men who aren't ever going to go to therapy. I'm not saying that we're therapists. We are furthest thing from therapists. What we do is we create an environment for men to go, this is fun. This is cool. This is hard shit. Oh crap. I'm talking about something that's very uncomfortable, but it's very healing to talk about this and journal about this. The guys to my left and right aren't judging me right now. Oh, they've had similar things too. Okay, cool. now they're open to go work with the therapist, and that becomes the first domino. So the project really is about breaking through your limiting beliefs, your upper limiting factors, your glass ceiling, whatever you want to call it, so that you can live a life of fulfillment. Because every guy wants to leave their fingerprint on this planet. You know you're going to die someday, and you want your legacy to live on. For that to happen, you have to break through your limiting beliefs and reach your potential. Having the potential isn't good enough. Doing the work to get there is the most meaningful thing we can do. And that's what the project does, is helps men break through and start doing the work.
My wife says this thing. She says, sometimes we don't need to be told what we need to do. We just need to be told that we're not alone in it. And I mean, I found power in vulnerability. When I was younger, I had an eating disorder. And I was 14 years old, very severe eating disorder. And super embarrassed that I experienced this when I was younger. I put this wall up. I didn't tell anyone. It was just like me, my mom, and dad that knew it. And then as I started social media accounts and growing in the fitness space, I was very aware and observant that there were these eating disorders, unhealthy relationships with food everywhere. It's like, all right, I'm gonna talk about this. I'm gonna open it up to see if other people resonate with it. And I started talking about it, and the amount of people that responded with, I'm going through the same thing. I'm experiencing this. Like, I need help. It made you realize that they didn't need me to give them advice. They just wanted to know that they weren't doing this on their own. There's power in that. And I think as men, we build these walls up. We're embarrassed. There's this false perception of we have to be perfect. We have to be hard. We can't be weak, or what is perceived as weak. And it's refreshing when you can put guys in a room together and just break them down physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the transformations that you guys see from the beginning of the 75 hours till after? And what do you hear from their families?
So the biggest thing we see, and we as instructors, we talk about it. Like, we're like, oh, dude, that guy just flipped the switch. Like, you can tell, like, they've got this look like, oh, fuck, I don't know what they're going to bring next. Like, whatever. Because they'll go from, like, pulling a truck to ice bath, pulling a truck, ice bath, pulling a truck, ice bath, to like 3 hours of sitting with me in a classroom environment where I'm talking about, when was the last time you took your wife on a date? What does your actual schedule look like? Your morning routine? Do you set yourself up to win? So then all of a sudden, Ray and Steve will come in at three hours later and bring hell again. So we've literally had guys, while I'm teaching, seated, drinking coffee, bro, raise their hand, and I'm thinking they're going to ask a question about, well, should I work out first or get my work done first? I go, yeah, what do you want? What's, you got your hand up? He goes, I want to quit. I want to ring the bell. I'm like, bro, you're sitting there. Why? He goes, I don't know what they're going to bring next. So they go into their head, right? They start. And so that same guy, if there's somewhere around hour number 30, after the first 24 hours, guys who haven't quit start flipping the switch, where now Ray and Steve could bring anything. And they'll just look, give him this hard look, like, go ahead, motherfucker. Like Goggins talks about, they literally try and take Ray and Steve's soul. And I love seeing that. And then when I'm in the room with them teaching them and these guys are getting rest, I'm like, keep taking souls, keep taking souls. All I'm trying to do, I'm the Papa Bear. All I'm trying to do is root for them. Don't fucking ring the bell. And so you see that switch flip, you see it in their eye. They're not going anywhere. They may get hurt and get medically rolled. Our medics will roll them to another class. But that guy who flips the switch, you could see something different in his eyes. He will not ring the bell. He will die, but he won't ring the bell. And then I've gotten 6 letters now, from 5 from us wives and 1 from an actual graduate that says, and my husband said that if the project doesn't work for him, that he's ready to end his life. And dude, I'm so glad I get the letters afterwards and not before, because I would not want a guy to go through the project knowing that. That's too heavy. Like, that's, I don't want that responsibility on us. But to know that the lives that we were able to help save has been very meaningful for me, because I've twice now I've been in a position where I could have helped someone if I saw the signs. One person I saw the day before, she was fine. Everything was great. Next day she ate a bullet. And another one was actually one of our project graduates. He had gone into a 6-month coma pre-project years before. And came out of the coma and had these dark mood swings. And he was doing the best he could. And the project was one of many modalities that he was trying to self-better himself, right? To improve himself. And man, he did awesome. In fact, he met a guy in his class of the project and they started a business together and everything was great. But he found himself in a dark mood and he had an experience with his kids who were teens. And apparently one of his teen kids weren't giving him enough attention, but that plus being in a mood, he ate a bullet. Now, I had seen him about 3 weeks before and Ray talked to him the day before. So all I know is we have a darkness within. There's just that door that we step through within that most people don't want to acknowledge that's there, but that door is there. It's okay to see what's in that door, behind that door. It's not okay to live there. And so the dudes we've been able to help has been very meaningful to me. And that's like on the far end, right? Like, wow, I was going to off myself and I didn't. Then there's dudes whose relationships improved, divorces that got back together, career starts taking off. They stop sabotaging their business because they had this weird belief system about money because the way they grew up poor. And that's very fulfilling for me. Like this is literally my life's work, the project. And it's so cool to be involved with instructors who feel the same way. And I'm lucky that people go, man, you guys charge 12 grand now and we just raised the price to 15 grand for the project. You guys must make a lot of money. Only one class has been profitable. Every class we run at a loss because it ain't cheap to get to have two full-time medics to have these guys and pay them and we get best of class. But I'm really blessed that I've come to a great country like the United States, become an entrepreneur, built businesses that allow me to fund and pay forward the healing of men. But I'm convinced that had I not had that sexual abuse in my life, that I would not be this guy who's as my wife calls it, the Pied Piper of broken men. And I love it that way.
I thought you were going to owe it all to the stuntman with me, but okay.
Not quite.
I like the concept of switches.
Yeah.
In terms of, talk about during the crucible, mm-hmm. flipping the switch. And when I think of switches, it kind of goes back to the inconsistently consistent sometimes, yes. where people are motivated, they turn the switch on. They're not motivated, they turn it off. You'll see people just turn it on and off the switch all the time. And I thought of this concept years ago where it's, for me, when I saw a big change in my business, a big change in my life, it's when I flipped the switch on and then I broke this switch.
Fucking A.
So I could never turn it off again. So even when you go back to try to turn it off, you're shit out of luck.
Can't.
You broke the switch.
You're stuck on go.
Yeah. And that's how I feel all the time is I there's no option to turn it off. You know, you got this far pushing. I mean, for me, I've been building my business for 10 years. I got this far pushing this hard. Why the fuck would I stop now?
Yeah.
Why would I turn back now? Just keep. And I think of, we use the metaphor sometimes too, is foot on the gas pedal. And I was thinking about this a few months ago on a podcast where I think about my foot on a gas pedal and you're redlining this vehicle as hard and fast as possible and the engine breaks. What do? You shove your feet through the ground, you Flintstone this car to keep it moving. You just do whatever's required, right? So I love what you guys are doing with the Modern Day Night Project. And I feel it's necessary.
More than ever.
Right? And absolutely. And I'd love to know why you guys think that we as men are moving into even a darker position from the perspective of the world or experiences or social media and we talked about it previously, this concept of the unconscious. And you look at a lot of people walking around in cities at dinner with their families, they're on their phones. Mm-hmm. You ever look at like a family at dinner and they're all on their phones? You're like, what the shit are you guys doing? And we're unconscious. Like we're in this world of this unconscious population. How do we bring the unconscious back to consciousness? Modern Day Night Project seems like one of those things, but why are we moving in a darker direction?
I think, I'll rephrase that. I know for a fact that we've had things too good for too long. And I might slaughter this, so I'm going to need your guys' help if you remember this phrase, but it was strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create bad times. Bad times create strong men. We've had good times for so long. The only good thing that happened with Biden getting voted as president, and let's not forget that he got more votes than the popular Obama. What a fucking scam. But the only good thing that happened with Biden getting voted as president was that things turned very bad very quickly. Inflation is over 10%. I know they're saying it's 7%, but it's over 10%. You look at what happened in Afghanistan, how we left troops and troops left and we left billions of dollars in equipment and Americans behind. You look at how we handled this whole 2020 pandemic and start printing up so much cash that the country is going into a spiral. We needed a bad time to happen. It's sad, it's unfortunate, but we need it because good times, especially where technology is concerned, creates convenience and comfort. Think about this, dude. There was a time that you would have to go to Primo's down the street to get your bean and cheese burrito with extra cheese. Today, you pull up an app and you do that through a convenient mechanism and someone brings you that. You used to have to remember to call a cab the night before to pick you up from the hotel, take you to the airport. Now the morning of, you just call up an Uber or a Lyft. You used to have to book a hotel wherever. Now you can book someone's house, beachfront, dig your feet right into the sand without doing anything to have put yourself to deserve that house that's on the sand. And so we have gotten so convenient in technology. There's been so much comfort that the human body atrophies when you don't work it out. The human mind, the human emotional state, the resiliency atrophies when we don't use our resiliency and common sense or get in the car and drive somewhere. And we've gotten so dumb, so convenient, so comfortable, so entitled, and so used to being, by the way, the whole social media thing, it's literally part of the comfort and convenience factor because if you've ever heard of the term variable response, when you go to a Las Vegas casino and you put your coin in and you pull that handle on the slot machine, you're waiting for the three cherries to come up to get that jackpot, and it doesn't. You got two cherries. Damn, close. So I'm going to put another quarter in. And then now you might have gotten it. Well, that just created a dopamine hit, variable response. So now you pull the handle again. Before you know it, you spent $1,000 to win nothing. You wasted time and money, two resources that you'll never get back. And so social media has figured out how to create variable response. I want to see if someone liked my shit, shared my shit, left a comment on my shit. No, they didn't. How about now? How about now? How about now? And we have gotten so used to this comfort and convenient world of gone are the days of doing something so good and amazing and great that it gets talked about in Wall Street Journal or New York Times or whatever on the news. Now it's, can I post something using filters to make myself look awesome to get an immediate dopamine hit? And if so, I'm going to do that again and again and again. So now we needed bad times. And I, as much as I hate saying this, the generations that are coming up who are thinking very liberally, who are operating from a place of some form of compassion or empathy or understanding towards socialism and communism, which I know very well, having come from the Soviet Union, they need to see that taxing the rich is not just taxing the rich. First, Biden comes in and he taxes the rich. Then he creates inflation to tax everybody. Gas prices, chicken breast has doubled, construction equipment has doubled. All these things that you're seeing that average people are paying for, that's inflation is a tax on average people. So guess what? I'm rich. You're going to raise my taxes? Cool. I'll figure out how to make more money. I know how to solve more sophisticated problems in exchange for more money. The person who's got that 9 to 5 wage was like, yay, they're going to tax the rich and give it to me. Sure. You went from $12 an hour minimum wage to $16. Good for you. But gas has doubled, chicken breast has doubled, everything has doubled, and you just got taxed way more than I did. This is the dark times that we needed to get us out of the shit storm that we're in. And many years ago, I was at Joe Polish's event, about ready to get up on stage and speak. The speaker before me was Tony Robbins, and I was nervous getting mic'd up because how do you follow Tony Robbins? And he was finishing up, and he was clapping his big, giant, baseball-sized mitten hands, saying, "Don't be built for summer, be built for winter, because winter is coming." And I remember thinking, holy shit, he's right. Things were so good for so long. Sooner or later, we're going to have a winter, whether it's in the form of another terrorist attack, stock market crash, housing market crash, or in this case, this whole shit show that's happening. Well, winter has come. Tony was right. Winter has come. And winter will make us stronger. It will also kill off, like evolution does. The weak will perish, and we will have stronger humanity as a byproduct. And people will be like, man, that's not politically correct. Yeah, it's not, but it's very accurate with how the world operates.
I heard Dakota Meyer say this multiple times before. He says he would never wish again for a September 11th, but he would wish again for a September 12th.
Yeah.
And I always think about that in terms of sometimes the darkest days that are brutal and terrorist and destructive will bring some light times.
Flags were flying everywhere. Communities were coming together. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, you know, I just think the world needs to do more hard shit. Like, I'm 50 years old. I didn't have a cell phone growing up. If I wanted to go to McDonald's, I jumped on my bicycle and I drove 14 miles to get a milkshake. I never went without. We were talking about how easy it was for us to be kids. It's not easy for anybody to be a kid, but it's so easy to sit in your house. I talk to people that don't even leave their house anymore. The world is a beautiful place. If you want to make it a beautiful place, get up, get off your ass and go do things. Hike, walk, run, you know, work out. That's the thing. We're killing ourselves internally. I mean, you can sit and do Zoom calls. What do people do with fucking Zoom calls? They turn the camera off. That annoys the shit out of me. What are you doing? They're not paying attention, right? Get up and still go to work. I landed the other day at Friday. I landed because I always come in early because we had to do something out in California. First thing I do is I drive to the office and I close a deal. People are looking at me like, why did you do that? Because that's my job. Instead of I could have just went back to the hotel, took a nap, you'd have never known where, or go to this guest house, excuse me, and do that. No. Do things. Get out of your comfort zone. Create growth. Create opportunity versus sitting in your house and just waiting. That's what people do now. They wait for a handout. They're waiting for this. That's what average people do. People like us that are successful, we're going out and we're creating. I'm the vessel of my ship, man. I'm going to create growth. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to make more money. I don't care how that makes me sound. I like money. Money buys me time and opportunity. My wife doesn't work anymore. She's got the hardest job in the world. My daughter goes to a great Christian academy. I live in a beautiful house. Right? I'm the kind of guy that takes my wife and my family on 3 vacations. 1 because you have to, 2 because you want to, and 3 because you're the fucking man and you can. Seriously. We had this conversation with your little girl when the time comes. Mm-hmm. Be that man. They're not huge. I'm not going on like Tahiti and stuff. Just little getaways. Bedros taught me, have date night with your wife. I have date night with my wife, date night with my daughter, daddy-daughter night. When my son comes home and visits me, we have man time. You can't say mandate. That just doesn't sound right. That's the kind of things that I do, and I like it. I will not let, social media, I love it and I hate it. I fucking love it because all you're seeing is a glimpse, like you said, a success train, right? I'm the guy that will post my wife making fun of me, right? I don't just post look at me, I'm a newbie. I don't do that. I want people need to see that life's real. I fail all the time. I just won't fucking quit. That's the difference. You win and you learn. I only lose if I quit. I won't quit. I will fall on my ass 20 times. Truth be told, working for him, I don't even dust myself off anymore. I just get up. I'm just going to get up because it's, here we go. We're going to do it again. And I get better. Every time I get up, I get stronger, right? Perfect example. If you and I get in a fight and you keep jabbing me with a right, I'm either going to have to learn how to block that or every time I fight you, I'm going to get knocked out. I'm tired of getting my ass whooped. I want to whoop ass now. That's what I do. And that's because I accept being uncomfortable. I accept realizing that every day that I get up, number one, be grateful, not greedy. It's a blessing. Because that's the thing that pisses me off. People that get up and, you kidding me? You're alive. That is the greatest gift in the world. right? 14 to 16 hours or whatever you have of time to do something. Either kick ass or get your ass kicked. I'm tired of getting my ass kicked. I had it kicked as a kid. I don't want to do that shit no more. Mm. I want to be the guy that goes out and just, I want to wreak havoc, good havoc, make an impact, right? Just leave my mark on the world. When I die, they're going to go, that motherfucker was crazy. And he left an impact and I will never forget him. He was a savage from dusk till dawn. That's what I want to be. But he was also a great husband, a great father, a great human, loyal employee. Because I really think that the key to being successful in life is being loyal. That's what I really think it is. It's about getting up, crushing it, and just being loyal. Because when you work with people like this, it's easy to go, oh my God, I want, because you see, and I told him when he interviewed me, he goes, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I said, I want to be you. He told me, I swear to God, come fucking get it. I ain't going to be here in 5 years. I'm going to be at a whole different level. Come get it.
The most insulting thing you'll ever hear, Nick, as you grow this amazing empire of yours, is when people go, man, I can't wait to be where you are, thinking that you'll be there waiting for them. Yeah. It's like, motherfucker, I'll be a decade ahead of you.
Yep.
Like, you're growing at an exponential rate. In other words, this decade got you a decade of results. The next 10 years will get you 2 decades of results. That's just, it's compounding like interest. And these motherfuckers don't realize that. And so when people try and compliment themselves, not knowingly insult us by saying, well, I want to be you. It's like, motherfucker, do you know what time I wake up? Like, I know Jocko puts his watch picture up 4:30 every morning, but the other day he put something on social media and I liked it at 1:30 in the morning Pacific time. And he texted me, he's like, boss, you're up. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm up. I'm up working at 1:30 in the morning. I'm not necessarily posting about it. And good for Jocko. Like, I love him. He's a good dude. Post about it. But the point is, who's willing to do that work? See, there was a time where you didn't have to introduce suffering into your life because it existed. Imagine when we were cavemen. Nick the caveman says, I'm going to find that cave for my family to live in. My wife's pregnant. She's going to have a daughter in July, right? And so Nick finds that cave and he's like, and he grunts to her and she's like, grunts back. And she's like, in grunt language, she says, we need fire, motherfucker. So Nick's like, shit. So he looks left, looks right. There's a saber-toothed tiger there and a woolly mammoth there. And you got to somehow fight these motherfuckers to go get some wood to keep her and that baby and her tummy warm. And you do. That's suffering, fighting off those fuckers to get that wood. And then she's like, grunt, grunt, I'm thirsty. Shit. So now you got to hollow out some stump to go 3 miles to the river, get water, don't spill a drop as you're fighting that saber-toothed tiger who's just as thirsty and hungry to eat you as you are thirsty and hungry to drink that water and eat that apple that he's standing by that apple tree. So suffering was built into us, even during the time where we had to milk our own cow and horse and buggy and, you know, wooden tires or wheels on our wagons. And now everything's too comfortable, too convenient. So people are like, why do I have to suffer? I don't have to suffer because your mental muscles, emotional muscles, your resiliency muscles will atrophy, you stupid fuck, if you don't. And that is why suffering must be built into our lifestyles now because they were a byproduct of how we lived back then. So the caveman got too smart and created the iPhone and apps and convenience, and now we are getting very stupid.
Yep. Perfect example. Even my daughter's done it before. Daddy, you order food, it comes in wrong. You think the end of the world. But you know what? It's my fault as a father. I should have taken my family to the restaurant or went there and got it myself. But what did I do? I'm guilty. I've been complacent before. My daughter got 2 wrong orders. Guess what? Every time I go, she wants that now. We go there. We sit down. I make sure her meal's perfect. And guess what? I am not letting her, because that's not something you get upset about. Oh my God, they forgot my croutons on my salad. Really? Is that the end of the world? Really? Is it? Because that's the most that kids deal with nowadays, you know, because they have everything handed to them. I hate it. I hate it. If I could, like, you see where, like my cell phone, because I am guilty of it. I'll be doing this. My cell phone's in there. It's in there because I don't want to know what the hell is going on except what's going on right here. He has more discipline than me with the phone. I'm always like, oh my God, that could be a sale. That could be a call. And I'll literally in the middle of, he'll be like, what the hell are you doing? I gotta grind. People just need to, they do. This country needs to suffer more. And I'm not talking with gas prices and all this shit that's going on. People just need to go out and get out of their comfort zone. That is the message. Get out and do hard things. Fuck. It's not, and it's exhilarating when you get another foot higher on that climbing wall or you you run an extra second faster in that mile, right? Because you're seeing, because there's no such thing as perfection. There's only fucking progression, right? And I'm going to continually progress, you know, and I will call people out. I will reach out to people like you. And I, you know how hard it is to reach out to a huge influencer and say, hey, listen, I just want your advice. Dude, you picked up immediately. People that just think that, you know, I guess obviously you might've did your homework too, but I want to be better. How can I run like you? And obviously you saw it and were like, well, number one, you're running the wrong shoe. You're doing this same thing like him. Now, I didn't know that I insulted you by doing it, but I want to be a better businessman. So I came to him and said, listen, I don't know jack shit. The cool thing I had when I went into with him is I had no bad habits because I never sold anything before in my life. I had no bad habits. I'm like, teach me. I'm your sponge. I'm going to absorb it. Versus going in there and going, well, you know, I was a Navy SEAL. That shit ain't going to get you nowhere with this cat anywhere quick. You know, like, I think people just need to be humble. They need to be, I don't even believe in being hungry. You need to be starving just to grow, right? Just as a father, like every day you're going to learn something from this little girl and you're going to teach this little girl something for the rest of your life. That is a privilege, man. And it will be, having a little girl, sometimes it's going to be uncomfortable. There's some things when she gets older, daddy, you're embarrassing me. It's like, what do I do? And you just figure it out. FIO, that's what life's about. Figuring shit out, man. I love it. I love the journey that I'm on and I love being uncomfortable. I do. I welcome being uncomfortable.
I feel very grateful to have watched my grandparents kind of growing up as I was younger, being in central Pennsylvania. My grandfather, Grandpa Bear, he was a dairy farmer in PA. And I think watching the farming community, especially the dairy farming community, or even agriculture, you learn this new respect for suffering. So I remember I was younger, but I could still remember the stories my dad would tell me or the stress my grandpa would have if we didn't get rain for a few days and the crop yield wasn't growing. And that's all the money you're making that year. Or they were waking up at 4 a.m. before the day started, and then at night before the day was over, milking cows twice a day. And just watching them grow up and the farm life. And then being in central Pennsylvania, you know, we have Amish all around us, and that's the life that you know and you see and you observe. And I've carried those lessons on with me from my grandfather. And I always think of this kind of situation where there's this group of people walking through the woods and they get to this fork in the road and they realize 100 meters through this thick brush is where they need to be. But then there's this trail that goes 8 miles in the opposite direction. It goes to the same place. And 9 out of 10 people are going to follow that path because they don't want to push through that brush. But there's one person that's going to say, fuck it, I'm going through this. Mm-hmm. And they bushwhack through that shit and they get there and they're the first there. They're willing to suffer for that small amount of time for the reward while everyone else is going to take their time. They're not going to break a sweat. They're not going to get bloody. But it's going to take them 3 hours to get there. And I always think about that metaphor in that situation where it's really easy to follow the path of least resistance. But for me personally, I want that resistance. That resistance is, you know, I think of it in terms of endurance training. Whenever I'm running or cycling, during my last Ironman prep, I was like, fuck, I'm always either running into a headwind or I'm running up a hill. Hills and headwinds, what is that? That's resistance. Yep. The only way to get through the resistance is lean into it.
Yep.
So let's talk about why we don't reach our full potential. And I think we've covered on some of these topics so far, and I've heard you guys talk about these. You know, one of those being is following the path of least resistance. There's also lack of accountability. There's lack of purpose. There's a scarcity mindset, the victim mentality. Mm-hmm. What's the number one thing that's holding most people back from reaching their full potential?
The story they sell themselves on. Everyone's got a story. And everyone wants to tell you their story of how bad they had it, how hard they had it. And the more times you tell yourself or others that story, the more you reinforce the fact that you're not meant to have happiness, success, abundance, great relationship, awesome health, abs, whatever. The story, they don't realize that they still hold the pen. And there's thousands of empty pages still in that book that they can rewrite that story. They spend more time talking about all the previous pages that mom and dad didn't, you know, they expected too much of them, or maybe dad beat them, or they were the victim of something and the grandparents didn't love them enough, or they never heard I love you. Great. You had a bad parent and child relationship. Got it. You can go tell 100 people about it. Or as you get into a new relationship and have a child, you can have a second chance at a parent-child relationship and rewrite that story. See, we all have two chances at a parent-child relationship. Once when we're the child, once again when we're the parent. But we have to let go of the pages that others have written in our book and realize we got this pen. And we can start writing how the story looks from this day forward. But what's stopping them is the work that they haven't done. The work of healing through their traumas, their insecurities, their limiting beliefs, the glass ceiling, the whatever the thing is. That work is the ugly, long work that you can't post about on social media and get an immediate 1,000 likes or shares. That work is the work that you do. Like, I worked with Kevin 4 weeks to learn how to manage my anxieties and panics. I worked with him for 15 months on a weekly basis to work through the deep work of what happened to me as a child and how I felt shame, rage, confusion, broken, unlovable, unworthy. And it's not fun. See, those words I threw out all within seconds, but each session was spent on, let's talk about rage. How does it show up in your work? How does it show up in your relationship? What about with your kids? When I grabbed Andrew's little iPad and smashed it into pieces. Unnecessary. But I did it because I was taking the rage from what happened to me as a kid and still feeling like a victim and smashing my son's iPad because he, you know, mom said that he was on it when he wasn't supposed to be. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, what a savage, stupid thing to do. That's Joseph Campbell in his book, The Power of Myth, another great book to read, talks about the human animal versus the human being. And the reality is we're not all human beings. Most of us are human animals. We're selfish. We are impulsive. We react instead of respond. The human being realizes that, wait a minute, man, I'm a purpose-driven animal. Like, I'm meant for something greater. Like, I have, because everyone has a gnawing of greatness within. Everyone does. But all those limiting beliefs and the traumas that have happened to them are like the emergency brake on a car. If I give you a Ferrari, but then pull the e-brake and I'm like, here you go, Nick, drive it around the track. You're like, bro, it is not performing like this Ferrari is supposed to perform on YouTube. I watch YouTube. It's kicking ass. Here it's not. Well, what if we can drop that e-brake? Then it will. That e-brake, while it's easy to drop inside of a car, it takes months. Every session I would get out with Kevin, I would feel like for days afterwards, like I'm walking through molasses, because you're just like opening up wounds and boxes and doors that you have locked for so long. That's the deep work that people have to do. And when they do that, they will reach their highest purpose and potential. And then once they do that self-work, then there's something magical called a routine. And you could either have a routine that sets you up to win or routines that are set up to help you lose in life. For example, if someone wakes up, sets their alarm to wake up at, let's say, 6:30 in the morning. Then they hit the snooze button. You just got an L. You broke a promise to yourself. People go, well, how do I build confidence again? I'm like, oh, look, there's this thing called the confidence and competency loop. And if you just keep doing things and keep getting little wins, your confidence builds and you get more competent and you get more confidence and you get more wins. Oh, okay. Well, if you hit the snooze button first thing in the morning, you broke a promise to yourself. You just stacked an L. Now you're going to sleep in. Now you're going to miss your workout. Now you're going to be in a rush to get to work. You're going to show up unprepared. You just stacked 4 losses there before even 8 a.m. shows up, right? Instead of if you set your alarm to wake up at 6:30, you don't hit the snooze button, drink your 30 ounces of water, send out, like I send out 3 gratitude text messages in the morning after my 30 ounces of water. I don't check social media. Why are you checking social media? I want to check in on Instagram to see. I'm just going to check in on YouTube. I'm going to check in on Facebook. Motherfucker, are you Mark Zuckerberg? You don't need to check in. He needs to check in to see if the fucking platform's up. You need to check in on your life. You need to see what you're grateful for. You need to make a GSD list, get shit done list, and start executing off that list. And if you did it right, you would have built that GSD list the night before, doing a brain dump right before you set your alarm and then gone to bed. So all that shit's now swirling around in your head. But the human being is willing to do that. The human animal that hasn't done the self-work is literally impulsive and checking in and seeing everybody's highlight reel and how awesome their life is. And they start having FOMO. And then they go, you know what? My life sucks anyway. Why should I do anything productive towards it? Why should I have a great routine? I'm going to tell you why people need a great routine. About 7 years ago, I rescued this beautiful, amazing dog, 90 pounds of love. Her name is Cookie. She's part Mastiff, part German Shepherd. I knew she was going to be our dog. I saw her picture and I knew that she was the one. My son and I flew to San Francisco. We rented a truck and we drove her back. Now, when we got her, we had never had a big dog before. So at the time she was 8 months old. And so she was pulling around my wife and my kids on the leash. I could barely hold on to her, Nick. And we had these like two little chihuahuas at the time and they were easy to manage. And so my wife's like, you know what? I think we need to bring in a dog whisperer or something. I'm like, cool, great idea. So we bring in this lady. She works with the dog for a few weeks, teaches it all the commands and which side of us to walk on and all that stuff. But then she spends about 3 days with us, teaches us how to work with the dog. And she goes, hey, this dog is part German Shepherd, part Mastiff, which means that as a German Shepherd, she needs a routine every morning. She needs to feel like she's shepherding your kids around and keeping them safe. Or maybe the routine is to make sure your house is safe or wake up early in the morning and play catch with her 10 or 12 times. Because if this dog does not have a sense of routine that's consistent every morning, like a purpose, then she's going to start digging holes in your backyard. I'm like, wait, what? Why would this dog start digging holes in my backyard? She was, well, in the absence of not having a routine, she'll give herself a routine because dogs get anxious and depressed and give themselves a routine, start digging holes in your backyard. I'm like, holy shit. While this lady's talking to me and my wife, I'm like smashing my wife on her arm. I'm like, holy fuck, we're no different as humans than this dog. Because in the absence of purpose, we will start digging holes in our life. In the absence of doing something meaningful, we will start literally binge watching TV, binge eating, binge drinking, binge pornography, any vice will lead to self-destruction, holes in your life. And so people who think like, no, I'm a human being. I'm like, no, bro, you're a human animal. You're a human animal until you get to a point of self-awareness and consciousness where literally these eyes, it's just a window that you're experiencing life through and you can respond and not react. And you can open doors for others instead of just like barreling through like a selfish piece of shit. That's the human animal who barrels through. The human being opens doors, says please and thank yous, is absolutely capable at killing someone. Like Jordan Peterson says, they're dangerous, but they know how to manage that. That is a huge difference. So someone who has structured morning routine, sets themselves up to win, they have a purpose in life, and they're constantly working towards that purpose as you are, welcome to being a human being. And that is a massive differentiation.
Now, I want to add something to that. I want a whole different spectrum. I recently had B put out an email. It was amazing. I just had a 50th birthday party. And I brought a lot of people, right? Stars and all this, all these amazing people came. My wife put on this amazing party, but I had a bunch of my friends from my hometown. And I think the reason why some of these young men, well, not young, they're my age, haven't hit their full potential is because they're living in the past. I call it the Al Bundy syndrome, right? They are literally guys that are my age. They're just living in that comfort zone. They're remembering that touchdown or the first time. A lot of them are, you know, living in the same hometown and they're doing this and doing that. They're so fucking complacent with what they're doing. And I love my friends, but there's no reason why, you know, and I don't know what they're doing with their financial life, but they should be in better shape and they should be doing this and they should be doing more. And it's because whenever I talk to them, the only thing they want to talk about is us growing up. That would be like me saying I was a Navy SEAL. That's it. No. I'm going to level up on everything I do. It's easy to, I'm a Navy SEAL, give me this, give me that. That shit didn't work with him. Great, you're Navy SEAL, let's use it, but let's move on. Let's become better. And I think the reason why people don't reach their full potential is because they got one win in their life and it felt good. And I think they're so fucking scared of losing and not having that feeling again that they just said, you know what? I'm just going to remember that touchdown that I made, or I slept with the homecoming queen and I married. That's not enough, right? you need to challenge yourself. Like, me being a Navy SEAL is great. I have a book coming out. I don't want to talk anything about being a fucking Navy SEAL. I want to talk about everything else in my life that I'm doing now. People are like, you can't do that. He told me, yeah, you can. You should. That's a part of my life that got me to where I am now. But now what's next, right? People, like, they have this amazing chapter in their book. And what do people do? The reason why they're not reading that, reaching their full, they just keep reading that fucking chapter. I want to create new chapters, right? I want to be better in everything I do. And a lot of people, they just get so complacent and they're happy with their 9-to-5 job. And it infuriates me. And he, and I'm not even going to get into the email that he wrote, but it was
let me encapsulate it. Yeah. So Ray's wife, you know, had this surprise birthday party a couple weeks ago, and it was really awesome, man. The wife and I flew to Virginia, and we were all able to surprise Ray on his birthday. But a lot of these dudes, around his age are coming up to me and like, man, I'm Ray's, you know, oldest friend from school. And man, we were in buds together and all different stories. And I'm looking at them and I'm looking at Ray. I'm like, holy shit. Like, these are old dudes. And then I look at Ray. I'm like, this guy's a fit savage. And they're all about the same age. They're having their remember when conversation. I remember when Ray, da, da, da. And in my head, I'm thinking like, you probably don't know this, but Ray's a fucking top closer. He has like transformed men's lives who have never even touched the military. And like, he's surpassed this level of who he was. And he's like working on version 2.0, 3.0, 4.0 of Ray. And I look at them and so I wrote an email to my team every Monday morning for the last 8 years. I write an email to my team, and the email is designed to keep everybody, the entire team, purpose-driven on our company's vision and values, and then to help them professionally and personally. So the whole conversation was, guys, I was just at Ray's birthday party, and we all know Ray, and we see him walking around HQ when he comes out to visit for the project. And because he still lives in Virginia Beach. So when he comes out to California, he's at HQ. Like, you all see the 50-year-old Jack Ray, but what you probably don't know is all these dudes that grew up with him have like beer bellies, and they're just like disheveled, and they're limping along life, and like literally metaphorically and physically limping along in life. I'm like, that was a reminder that every day, the little wins of eating right, sleeping, keeping a positive mental attitude, working out, stacked on top of each other, when you're a half a century old, like this guy, you look like a fucking beast, you know? And because a lot of my teams, they're like in their 20s and 30s, right? And so everyone's like, oh yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. Great message, et cetera. And I got to thinking, like Tony Soprano said it best. He said, remember when is the lowest form of conversation that any two people can have. And I believe that to be true. Like, it's one thing to go, hey man, remember when class one of the project, we blah, 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 blah. But I want to talk about, what does class 100 of the project look like? I want to talk about, what does it mean when the Squire program, the father and son program that we have, is happening across the nation, one in every state, because we've licensed out the program. I want to talk about what it's going to be like when I'm forward looking. I don't want to have the remember when conversation. Like, that's the lowest form of conversation. Tony Soprano said it, and therefore I believe it.
Yeah. I ripped my rear view mirror off my fucking car, man. I just look out front. I don't even care. I don't have a backup mirror or backup camera. I'm looking ahead. That's all I do. That's half the times they tell stories, I don't even fucking remember them. I don't focus in the past. There's a few, you know, with the SEAL stories, but childhood memories, I remember a few of them. I don't remember all that shit because I've got so much more that has happened since then. And I'm creating so much more that it's way back there.
And it's fine to remember. Yeah. It's damaging to live there.
Yeah. That's what I was getting at.
Let's have fond memories of, you know, hey, remember when we worked out of a small office? Hey, remember when my basement was where we shipped things out of? Great, man. Like, those are fond memories, but I'm not going to live there. Like, that was the highlight of my fucking life. Yeah. God damn.
And I respect where I came from, right? And I mean, these guys are my best friends and I love them, but I know I'm so much more, and I don't think I'm better than anybody. I want to make that very clear, but I know that I am meant to do so much more. I will never stop. I don't know when that is. Probably when I die. I just want to leave an impact on this world. I don't want to be the guy that just goes, you know what? I'm working for Bezos now. I make $500,000. I'm done. I don't want to be that guy. And he won't let me be that guy because he'll probably fucking fire me. It's like, what's next? What can we do? How can, you know, one of the biggest lessons I learned from him when he interviewed me is like, the more you make, the more you take. And he's like, no, motherfucker. The more you make, the more you give. And that's what I'm learning, right? And because my mindset, that's how I was taught. The more you make, the more you take. And it's like, the more you make, the more you give. And that's not just from a monetary standpoint. Time is the most precious commodity we have, right? I'm careful with my time with him because sometimes I blow my wad with talking about the wrong things with him. Today he's like, "Hey, can we get back on track?" And I'm like, "But I don't get you that often." But my point is you just have to utilize the time that you have and make sure that you're giving back. Like, don't just too many people fucking settle, and it infuriates me. I don't know what my maximum potential is. I when I look up, all I see is up. When I look that way, all I see is that way. I do. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what's going to happen. But all I know is I'm just going to keep getting up and grinding. And when you talk to me in 10 years, I'm going to be grayer, but I'm still going to be just as jacked. Nothing's going to change. It's not. I refuse.
Well, it's almost like you don't hang your hat until you're dead. And I think too many people are ready to hang their hat on something they did in the past. I actually find this a lot of times with prior athletes, especially collegiate athletes. I was not a collegiate athlete, and this is by no means categorizing all collegiate athletes into one space, but I often find that when I talk to collegiate athletes, no matter what point they are in their life, they go back to somehow talking about playing that sport in college. Mm-hmm. I didn't play that sport. I didn't know them then. I don't know why we're talking about this. And Jesse Itzler is actually a big component of, he'll never talk about any of the things he's done in the past. He chooses one thing a year that he focuses on, whether it's building something or a new challenge. Like, he just finished doing a Ultraman Arizona. He's constantly talking about what he's doing this year or in the future, in the present. And he's done some big things in the past, but he never talks about them. He's talking about what he's doing right now or in the future. And I respected that a lot. And it's really easy to talk about what you've done in the past because sometimes those are good or bad things. And the future is unknown. And I'm the person that I like to put the future into existence. I like letting people know what I'm working towards or what I'm doing, whether I succeed or fail. It, one, holds me accountable and it puts eyes on me to say, watch what I'm about to fucking do. It's not going to be easy, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, guys, I appreciate you. This was epic. And to be honest, the Modern Day Night Project, I don't think could be a program any better at any time other than right now. And I think it's necessary. I think you guys are doing some amazing stuff. So I really appreciate you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, I guess we're getting dinner.
We're getting dinner.
Yeah.
Some push-ups.
You say when, sir, let's do them.
Hey, what's this thing called again? The stunt?
The stunt man.
The stunt man.
I will give you a tutorial tonight and we'll, no contacts. Don't have contacts in. I don't think you wear contacts, but if you do, take them out.
All right. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, sir. Man.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Bear Performance Podcast. Please leave a rating and review on the platform you are listening to if you enjoyed it. It helps us to grow and reach more people with the intent of changing lives through the Go One More mindset. If you are ready to take your health and performance to the next level, head over to bpnsubs.com to take the first step.